And good afternoon, Braidwood. It's Rod McClure, and I'm here with Benta Hart for Health Chat.
Yeah, let's have another chat.
We will, but before we do, we have to have a word from the people who help make our station functional.
Chemist Braidwood is open Monday to Friday, 8am till 5pm, and Saturday, 8am to 12:30pm at their new larger premises at the Village Terrace. The friendly professional staff can assist you with medication packing to assist with managing your medication, having your scripts kept on file with the pharmacy, acquiring MedAdvisor, an online app to help order and manage your scripts that are on file, COVID-19 vaccinations. Capital Chemist Braidwood, proudly sponsoring Braidwood FM 88.9. For all your septic needs, give our sponsor Braidwood Septic Services a call.
They're fully licensed and insured and are a Braidwood-based family-owned and operated company.
They carry out septic pump-outs, vacuum loadings, grease trap pump-outs and septic installation and repairs. Braidwood Septic Services on 0438 564 015
or 0400 400 251.
Batemans Bay Concrete Tanks are the local agent for bioseptic tanks and can construct 100,000 litre concrete water tanks on site. But they're not just about tanks. They do excavation, soil and gravel delivery, driveway repairs and site cuts. They also have for hire a 12-tonne tipper, a 6 and 8-tonne excavator and a track bobcat. Visit their website at www.bbctanks.com or give Marcus a call on 0411 287 360. Proud to sponsor Braidwood Radio 88.9 FM.
Changing Times is a small community newspaper that's produced in Braidwood fortnightly and can be purchased from Braidwood News Agency, IGA and the service stations. The community can support Changing Times by providing letters to the editor and other material of interest for publication. Contact the publisher Paul Cockrum on 0417 459 775 or times at bwdmag.com.au. Changing Times, supporting Braidwood FM 88.9.
Well, Benta, today we're going to be chatting about children and medicines.
Yeah, because like last time we talked about the other end of life, so now we thought we will go and talk about kids and particularly little ones.
Especially little ones.
Yep. So probably the first thing we need to talk about that is how do we store medication? Like do we just pop it in the cupboard or in a box somewhere or where do we keep it?
Well, I know what my children were like and cupboards were like a magnet.
Yeah. So when you've got to store medications, particularly when you have little kids in the home, it's got to be up high. Mm-hmm. Way out of reach. Even you got to think not just how tall is the child, how tall are they on top of a chair or a bench or whatever mm-hmm. they can climb up on, because some kids are definitely climbers.
They certainly are.
Yep. It's really important to think about where you're putting it. Is it up high enough when you store it? And you're also going to check if there's any special storage requirements for your medication. Like does it actually need to be in the fridge? Things like that. Keep it in a dark cupboard. Never put things in a window shelf where it can get hot, cold, exposed to sunlight. So make sure it's stored in a dark cupboard, up high, out of reach of the little fingers. Now, usually it's not during general storage we have the problem. Most parents knows how to get medications out of the way. And also, I will say any child lock, if a kids want to get through,
They'll get through it.
Yeah. I once heard a story of a test that was made with a bunch of preschool kids and a bunch of locked cupboards with child locks, and they were told there was lollies on the other side. I think the longest it took them to get through was 15 minutes. So that tells parents exactly what to keep in mind. Like if you really got to stop them, it's lock and key.
Yeah, and high.
And high. But it's often when things are in use we can run into trouble. So, for example, you have had a bottle of medicine out, you dosed your kids, everything's good. You forget to put it back in the cupboard. Yeah. And, oh, that was yummy. Let's have another swig. So the kid will manage to somehow open up the child-resistant bottle and have a swig.
Yeah, and they will.
And they will. So make sure when you have used to that it is put away again, out of reach, up high, all the stories. Yeah. And particularly like the difficult things also comes when you have one sick kid and one or two other kids who are fully alert and up and running. that's when you've got to be careful, because you might have dealt with the sixth one and just put it out of reach because you're busy sorting out one, and then the other two have had a feast in the meantime.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are things to consider. Now, another really big pitfall to be aware of, that is, you might have everything nicely organized at home. Now, either you are out visiting family, or you've got family coming to visit, particularly talking grandparents.
Yeah.
Make sure that they know to get their medication out of the way.
Yeah, that I've experienced that one.
Yep. And that is like, I once read a story that absolutely, like, thank God there was a doctor who had the right thought process. There was a child that was brought in to get looked through. The doctor went, oh, because they said, oh, no, we may have eaten some of grandma's tablets, but we're not really sure. But they've had a lollipop, so we're all fine now. There's no problems. Grandma was on medication for diabetes. The sugar in the lollipop had made the child feel well.
Right.
And when the doctor asked around what could be in the medication, they ended up keeping the child in hospital overnight and managed the low blood sugar that came, that could have been fatal had the child gone home and gone to bed and slept.
That just shows how dangerous things can be that
yeah.
don't appear to be dangerous at all.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, something that just struck me, Benta, I think most people these days, mums and dads, are really good at locking up poisons, for example.
Yeah.
I've been doing research at the museum, back in 1914-15, they weren't very good at it.
No.
The number of kiddies who died from eating rat poison or swigging down insecticide or bleach. Now, we've conquered those things. We need to put the same rules with medicines, don't
we? Yeah, and but as I said, like my biggest issue is particularly that grandparent visit one or the other way.
It changes the routine.
And then routine is changed. If you drop something on the floor, like kids are as good as dogs,
they'll find it.
Yeah, and shove it in their mouth, because that's what you do when you're that little age group.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, it's they're important pitfalls for people to be aware of.
So that's sort of probably my most important message, if you remember nothing else from today's chat, is make sure to keep that out of reach, not just at home, but also particularly that with the family visits and people visiting who has regular medications.
And what it really amounts to is regard every medication as potentially as dangerous as as a bottle of rat poison.
Yeah, well, that is everything in the right dose is safe, but in the wrong dose it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. Yep. So keep that in mind. Okay, so then the next thing we really come to, that is how to give medication. So that is to know, do we need to mix it up? Is it a powder you need to mix? What do you have to do with it? How do you give it? And then you're going, oh, my kid doesn't like it. I'll put it in some cordial or water or something. They might not drink all of it. And then they don't get the full dose.
Or there's sediment left behind.
There's all sorts of options there. So that's something, again, or you mix it with something it's not compatible with.
That could happen, couldn't it?
It could. It's usually you would be warned about it, but sometimes it may not happen.
Yeah.
So don't just mix any given thing with anything. Always ask, what can I mix it with if I need to?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And like your local pharmacist can definitely help you with that. So.
Okay. Right. Well, that's sensible.
Yep. Yeah, so, and it's just common sense, but sometimes, you know, weird things happen. Also realize you need to know how to give it.
Now, before we go any further with this.
Yeah.
One of the problems that I think we have, Benta, it's a little bit like being scammed on the telephone.
Yeah.
I think new mums and dads in particular feel embarrassed asking anybody about these things.
Don't.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ask, and ask one more time. If you're not 100% sure, or you think it looks weird, or you're not, like, ring up and ask.
Look, nobody's going to laugh at you.
No.
Or think you're silly.
And quite frankly, I know in the pharmacy here, and any pharmacy you walk into there, rather that you ask and clarify, than you go home and do something that was going, what?
Yeah. And then you really are being silly.
I would say it's more silly not to ask than it is to ask the question. And if you don't know the answer, there's probably others who don't know the answer either.
Yeah. That's very true.
It's a bit like sitting in class in school and nobody wants to put their hand up because nobody really knows the answer, but actually nobody knew. So yeah. It's okay to say, I don't know. No. And usually if you don't know, there's others who has the same thought, but who are not game to ask.
Yeah, felt silly or
embarrassed. Yeah, exactly. So, and one example is, for example, you've been given some medication for some ear infection. How do you give it? It says give 5 mils on the bottle. Do I put it in the ear? Do I give it via the mouth? Goes up the bum? Where does it go?
Yeah.
So if you are not sure, ask. And also, like, when you look at the volume, 5 mils and into the ear is a lot of volume.
It is, actually, come to think of it. Yeah. I just did a quick thought there.
Usually ears are drops. Where if you have a volume, it's probably by mouth. But if you are not sure, either read the paperwork that comes with it or ask.
Yeah.
Ask. Like, I can't emphasize that enough. If you are not sure, because I have just come across a dear young parent, first child, and put the oral medication that was to given by mouth into the ear because it was an ear infection. So, well, why don't we put it in the ear? That would make sense.
And it's not, yeah, it's not foolish. It's just misunderstanding.
It's just misunderstanding and not knowing. You're dealing with something completely new. You have not dealt with it before. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like that for all of us. When we deal with something new, you're going like, what am I doing with this?
And a child with an ear infection or a really bad fever, and if you're a new mum or dad, that's damn scary.
It is. And there's nothing wrong in asking and saying, how do I deal with this?
Yeah.
So please do. So it's important that you figure out how to measure it out. And again, make sure you measure out accurately when you give particularly oral medication to kids, that you get the right amount so you're giving enough for effect, but you're not overdosing.
Now, this comes down to using a medicine glass or something that you know is a teaspoon. Yeah. It is a teaspoon.
I would say don't ever use teaspoons.
Yep.
You use a medicine glass that is graded to do the correct amounts. You use a syringe or something else or a dropper or whatever you have been given that can measure out the correct amount.
Accurately.
Guessworks is really not correct for medication.
Yeah.
Close enough is not close enough.
Yeah.
No. And all the little measuring spoons we have at home, well, they say they're this much or they're that much. I would not trust them.
No, I think that's really, really good advice.
Yeah. So I would say get a syringe, get a measuring glass. If you have something at home that's getting a little bit hard to read, get a new one.
They're not dear. They're not expensive.
No, I would strongly recommend that. So we got to make sure we get our measuring right, because medicines given incorrectly by parents and carers is one of the most common reasons for accidental poison in Australian children under 12 months.
That's sobering, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's not actually what they get into in the cupboard, because that age group can't quite do that yet.
Yeah.
It's actually what the parents give them. So parents got to make sure they know how to dose their child, how to measure out. And if you're not sure, we'll ask for a demonstration.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with that either.
No. Like, ask to be shown.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine to ask. Like, I can't emphasize enough, when you're a young parent, particularly with your first child, when everything is new and you're up against the wall and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you haven't slept for days, and there's nothing wrong. And like, start asking the questions before you have the child even.
Yeah, that's another good point, isn't
it? Yeah, like before you have children, start thinking about what do I need of medications for my child? What could be needed? When can I start using it?
Do parenting courses actually look at that these days? They didn't in my day, that's for sure.
I wouldn't have a clue, to be honest.
It's an interesting question, isn't it?
I wouldn't think so.
No, and yet it should be. Yeah, well,
a really good website actually to get information from is called Better Health. It's an Australian website. I think it's made by some guys down in Victoria.
Right.
And there's a lot of good information in there.
Okay, Better Health.
Yeah, Better Health it's called. So that's one I could definitely recommend that you can have a look at if you can't get hold of someone to ask because of the timing of the day, because we all know that everything happens after everything else has shut down.
That's exactly right. It always is.
Yep, and that's why we say be prepared. Okay, so make sure we read the labels carefully and that you know what dose to give. Each time you buy a new bottle, even as something as simple as paracetamol, so like Panadol or Dimodon or whatever brand you now buy, double check the dosing is the same as last time. Know your child's current weight and age, for that matter.
Yep.
make sure you get all that right so you can pick the right dose. Yeah.
And it does vary, and often within quite small bands of age yeah. and weight.
Yep. So, and it depends because there's different strength. So some is thinner than others. So you've got to know what strengths you have and how much volume to give off that one.
Right.
So don't just go by memory. Double check on the label what you're supposed to be doing.
Something that just occurred to me, is there a difference between the child's Panadol, for example, and adult?
So there is... There's sort of three different formulations from my memory. Two of them are the same strength when
right.
you start looking in milligrams per mil.
Yep.
So you have the one for the very little ones. Because they're little, we want to give them a small volume. So it's actually more concentrated. So you've got to be quite accurate with your measurements.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Then you have the one that's used for, where they say, for 1 to 5.
Yes.
That's the thinnest one of them, where you can give quite a large volume to get the dose, because there's less milligrams per mils. And then when you go up to the older kids, you actually get back to the same strength that you gave to the little ones.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So that's my memory, just on top of my head. But it's something in that vicinity.
Okay. Just something that
yeah. I thought. So it's something to be wary of, is to always double check the strength and how much to give.
Yeah.
And one thing particularly to be careful with is if you have a child who is above weight for age, so it can either be obese or just a general big kid,
yep.
you've got to look at this amount you've got to give for the age and not the weight, because if you go by a weight for a heavy child, you can overdose them.
Right.
So it's very important to be careful there.
Right.
That you go by the lowest denominator.
The age or the weight.
Yeah.
Okay.
So whatever gives you the lowest volume, because also if you have a tiny kid who is tiny for their age, if you give them their age volume,
it'll be too much.
So you've got to go by their weight, which is less.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just, and again, so if you have a child who sits on those extremes of above pretty much the 90 percentile or below the 10% in their age for weight, so you can see that on their growth chart in the little blue books that all the kids have these days.
Yes.
That will tell you, if I'm in extremes, I'm going to go and double check exactly how much to give for my child, because they may not fit the normal standard dosing.
Now, let's just say that again.
Yeah.
It is, you look at the age and the weight, and yeah. whichever is the less.
Yeah, that's the one I would go by.
Okay.
So, and it particularly, I know there has been issues around big kids getting overdosed, because people just went and say, this is the weight, this is the dose. And then particularly with something like paracetamol, the max daily dose or just per dose is 1 gram. But actually, because the kit was so large, you would give them more than the 1 gram they should actually have had, which is the ceiling dose.
Right, okay.
So that has happened. And that's why I'm emphasizing we be careful there, because you have those big kits can trick you.
They sure can.
And little kids, for that matter, too. As I said, the extreme ends, that's the ones to take care of.
And if we think about our playgroups, mums, and more mums than dads in that instance, would be able to identify straight away, somebody's smaller or bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like...
Same age.
Yeah, same age. You have one who is 50 kilos at that age, and you have one who's 30 kilo at the same age.
Yeah.
And that's just how we are, and that's why there is this scale, and you have sort of the average in the middle, but we know that the average comes from that...
Overall scale.
Yeah, overall scale, and you do have something out on the ends of the spectrum. There, it will always be like that, and you just got to accommodate for that.
Okay.
So that's the important thing around weight and measurements, and we've talked about using the right equipment to measure with, that makes sure you actually can get the right dose. And then I will say, if you have a sick kid and you dose them, write down when you did it.
Oh, that's very good advice.
Yeah, write down the times. So saying, okay, I gave them a dose and this was what I gave them, and I gave it to them at 4 o'clock. Read on the bottle. Can you give the next dose? It can be in 4 to 6 hours. For most things, maybe 8 hours.
Right.
Don't go any earlier than that. If your kid are that sick that you need to dose them every 2 hours...
They need a hospital.
They need a hospital. They need to be seen. Because if you're giving Panadol every 2 hours, there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Something's not getting done right. And you need to have things assessed.
And writing it down is really, really important, because when, again, if you haven't slept well for several days and you're tired and it's 3 in the morning, it's very easy to think, well, it was 2 or 1 or whatever.
I can't remember what it was. Did I even give them something? I can't even remember that bit. So write it down.
Yeah.
And it can be something as simple as, well, piece of paper and a pen.
Yep.
That's your basics.
Yep.
Or some people who likes technology, well, they can set up a spreadsheet on the computer, whatever they want to do.
Get into notes on your mobile phone.
Yeah, well, exactly. Use all the equipment you have for... Actually, I would say notes on your mobile phone is probably the best one.
Yeah, well, most people have it near them most of the time.
Yeah, they're probably nearly on it anyway. So I would say do that, but write it down. Write down what you gave, when you gave it, how much you gave, so that you can backtrack what happened.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to happen if you end up in hospital. They're going to ask you when, what, how much.
That's exactly what they'll ask.
Yeah. So, and here you can just say, and we know that when you come to 5 o'clock in the morning and you ended up in hospital, that's exactly how you're going to sound. So.
You're right.
Okay. And we talked about being prepared. So that means know your child's current weight. Know already now how to dose them. Like you could have a little card that, or again, note in your phone saying at the 1st of May, my child was 30 kilos. I have calculated out these are the doses I'm going to give if I need to give them Panadol or ibuprofen or what I need to give.
Right.
And you have it there in your phone, ready to go, or on a piece of paper stuck to the bottle because that's what grandma needs. Whatever works.
Yep.
Whatever works for you. Like some people are better off with a note attached to the bottle because they're not going to figure out looking at their phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. We don't know. We're all different.
We are. But make some sort of record.
Yeah, make some record. Have something ready for yourself. Make sure you have the correct measuring device attached to the bottle.
Right.
Like I would even say use either in a box or where it's all together or string it on with an elastic band or string or whatever works for you so that you have the right device attached so you're not going, where is the cop with the syringe? I can't find it.
A good analogy would be where do you put your bike pump?
Yeah. Oh. Don't ask.
On your bike.
Yeah. Okay. And know where you'll keep it too. Like,
be
consistent with where you put medicines in the house and have them locked up and all that, as we talked about. Okay. So we have two main kinds of medications we use for pain and fever in the kid. One is called paracetamol and one is called ibuprofen. Paracetamol is great for pain and fever. The ibuprofen works for pain, fever, and inflammation.
Right.
So that's swelling and things like that, tissue inflammation. Now, both of them, you've got to make sure you know the dosing intervals. For paracetamol, it is every 4 to 6 hours, max 4 times in 24 hours you dose your child. For ibuprofen, it is every 6 to 8 hours, max 3 times. And with ibuprofen, because of the type of drug it is, it's really important your child is not dehydrated when you use it.
Ah.
Because if your child is dehydrated, so like have sweated out a lot, lost a lot of fluid and not quite, like you can nearly sort of pinch the skin and it's not flipping back and things like that, be very careful with using ibuprofen because if your child is dehydrated, there is a risk of kidney injury.
Okay.
So caution there. Yes, ibuprofen works wonders for the inflammation and pain and fever, but don't use it in a dehydrated child.
Okay.
So if they are throwing up or having diarrhea, I would be cautious. Okay. And also know that ibuprofen can irritate the stomach. Then I also have parents that, interesting, tells me that they love Panadol because it makes their child sleep. It is not a sedating medication. I would say the reason for that your child actually went to sleep is that you managed the pain and fever.
And that
and that's what let them sleep. Yep.
Okay.
So that's sort of around the dosing of those two medications. Then you also have something to be aware of, fever management. A little bit of fever is okay. You don't have to push it down immediately. A low-grade fever actually helps burn off what we have of infections.
Right.
So it does have a purpose. That's why your body is doing it. But we don't want the fever to go too high. That's why we're giving medication to bring it down. But you don't have to push it right down to non-fever state.
Okay.
And usually the sort of max temperature we should have, usual temperature is between 36 to 37.5
right.
Celsius degrees. If you go up over 38, we're beginning to talk a low-grade fever. When you're coming up over 39 towards 40, then we're having high-grade fever, and that's where I would say we should probably start bringing it down.
Right.
So you have your medications you can use. Make sure you give your kids drinks too of clear fluid, being it water or being it hydrolyte or something like that to rehydrate them with, keep them hydrated.
Right.
Keep them cool. Cool them by potentially a cool bath, so that's sort of around 32 degrees Celsius. Not okay. cold, because that actually makes the body try to heat up.
Yeah, that'd be a shock to the body.
Yeah, yeah. So don't give them a cold bath, a lukewarm cool bath.
Right.
So just be really aware of that. And of course, if your child is 3 months or younger, you want to take them to a doctor and get seen.
Yeah.
Because those very fresh bubbles, they're a bit different.
Yeah, they are.
And that's the ones where we can't always use medications because their body's simply not ready for it yet. So, and again, be aware that fits occurs when fever raises really quickly. And usually by the time your kid have a fever fit, it's too late to give a medication that takes 20 to 30 minutes to kick in.
Yeah.
So if you have a kid who has known fever fits and they start to get a temperature, well, maybe you will be more... then that would be more appropriate than to start giving them something to prevent that fast raise of temperature.
Right.
Because it's that really fast spike that gives the seizures. And it doesn't mean that they're epileptic or anything like that. It's just because of that fast spike. And it will be about one child between 20 to 30 otherwise healthy kids. They maybe will have one fever convulsion in between the age of 6 months to 5 years. So it's not completely uncommon.
No, no. Very scary when it happens.
Oh, yeah. I'm going, thank God I've never seen one with it, because I can't say that I would like to.
Oh, I've had one happen.
Yeah. And it's not very nice as a parent.
It's not scary.
No. Also, just a quick touch on cold and flu medication for little kids. Your number one is a humidifier to help them breathe.
Right.
It can be saline nasal drops to try and just clean out all the gunk of their nasal passages. Yeah. Again, keep them hydrated. There's really nothing to what we would call drying up their nose before they're 6 years of age. Reason being that those medications can actually have been seen to cause SIDS. So that's why I don't recommend it.
That's a really good reason.
Yep. So I'm going to stick to that one. And again, if you have infected eyes, you can wipe the eyes off with little clean wipes. We have something called little eyes that you can just clean the eyes with, get all the gunk out. So we have things like that available too. So that's, and rehydration again, can I just really advise parents, cordial, thinned up, just thin cordial? No, get proper rehydration fluid.
Right.
So that there's several available in your local pharmacies, supermarkets, wherever you can find them, that you can use to rehydrate your child with. It is small sips. Regular sips. Don't try and scull it because you will throw it right up.
Right.
But little sips to keep rehydrating. You've got to be careful with the reason for that. I'm saying don't just give thin cordial or lemonade or something like that. There's a lot of sugar in, and that is actually dehydrating.
Okay, all right.
That's why I'm saying use proper hydration fluids.
Right.
And the ones we have today is quite palatable compared to what they used to be. Yeah, because they definitely didn't used to taste very nice.
They didn't.
And when you can start eating normally again, get back on the child's normal diet, avoid really fatty or sugary foods, and breastfed babies, keep offering the breast to them because they will hydrate better with the milk. Lots of little feeds.
Right.
And if they're formula fed, again, keep formula feeding them. Don't stop that. Just do that on top of the other rehydration.
Okay.
So that's sort of the main thing around that. And then I think we just had a quick chat around talking about NITs before we finish up.
We did.
Because, and the main thing as we also came to with NITs is comb and check, check and comb and check.
Yep.
Get a good lice comb, a good metal one, not the plastic ones. They break too fast, particularly if you have long hair. A plain white conditioner.
Yep.
Fill the hair up with it, comb it through, and get it out. And it is a long-term job, particularly if you have a sweet little girl with long hair, and even if it's curly, it's even worse.
Yes.
You will have to slowly start out at the tips and work your way in towards the scalp to comb it through.
Yep.
And I would suggest put on a movie, have the child focusing on the movie while you're focusing on the head.
That's a really good idea.
because it is not a nice experience, and it's important that there's plenty of conditioner in that hair when you do this combing.
Yeah.
And it is, and it, you got to do it every week if there's nits going around, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, covered a lot of ground very quickly there, Bianca.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll be back in around about a month.
Yep.
With another health chat. And yep. Until then, hopefully you could keep nice and warm, because it's not a very warm day.
No, I think it's going to be a slightly coolish winter.
It's feeling like it. 7 today was just a little bit cold.
Yes.
Okay.
See
you, Bianca.